I have a little bit more to say about the Sabbath for organ donation awareness. I can tell you that after years of procrastination, that I have just completed the form to be registered as an organ donor, knowing some wonderful people in our congregation who are waiting for a transplant or who have had one. I realize how much this matters. I would want my useful organs to help extend the lives of worthy people like them so they can go on to bless the world with their gifts. Yet, how can I be sure the people who will benefit from transplants of my organs will be just as worthy? What if they are selfish, greedy, or unkind? What if they don't believe in climate change? And the risks to our planetary home? What if they go to the wrong church? Or vote for the wrong politician? What if they are the wrong politician? I looked at the donor form. I could mark off which organs I don't want harvested. But I could not say, don't put my heart in a man who's heartless. Don't give my corneas to somebody who can't see the need for social justice and freedom for everyone. We can't pick and choose who will benefit from these donations, these gifts. This makes joining the organ donation registry a great act of faith. We trust that we are doing a good thing. We let go of control over whom we are going to help. By signing the donor card, we affirm every person's dignity and worth, no matter what. Human dignity is not only the first affirmation given in our Unitarian Universalist Association's list of principles, it's also our point of contact with many other people of faith, no matter our differences over theology. Human dignity is the touchstone by which all people of goodwill can measure our personal choices, organizational practices, and governmental policies. This topic of human dignity brings me back to the stories I learned in the Arizona-Mexico borderlands during my recent journey. In my last sermon with you, I recounted the struggles faced by the people who try to migrate here and the dehumanizing effects, even deadly effects, of the militarized U.S. border enforcement operations. Now I'd like to tell you a bit more and think together with you about this touchstone of human dignity. On this journey from a Tuesday to a Saturday in October, our group of UU clergy and lay leaders learns about the risk and pain endured by many vulnerable people. Day after day, it's hard to bear witness to the indignities they are put through. But every day, we also meet people who show kindness, reach out in help, and advocate for the vulnerable. We see human dignity affirmed by acts of generosity, courage, persistence, and truth-telling. That is what keeps us going, what gives us hope. As an elderly humanitarian volunteer in Arizona tells us, where there is kindness, there is hope. Refugees or migrants from Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, and Mexico traverse many miles before getting close to the U.S. border. Some of them ride from southern Mexico on a freight train. They call it the Beast, La Bestia. Others go all the way by foot or they hitchhike. Near the border, they have to pay smugglers, coyotes, to get them into the United States. Some coyotes are better than others. We learned that as many as 80% of women migrants are abused physically or sexually by smugglers, by the police, or by their own companions. Expecting abuse, some young women start using birth control before they set out on their journey. Migrants walk through an unfamiliar and unforgiving desert in Arizona. If they are lucky, before they collapse of heat stroke, they may find a jug of water or a Ziploc bag of high-protein food left by volunteers. Or they may find the medical tent, the No More Deaths medical tent, staffed 365 days a year. Volunteers operate this clinic rent-free on desert property owned by a woman who writes children's books. While providing first aid, No More Deaths may call the Border Patrol in case of serious emergency or if a migrant wishes to give up and surrender to the U.S., hoping to plead their case for asylum. In spite of warnings about the dangers of going ahead in the desert, many keep going. In addition to first aid, water, and rest, the migrants receive a fresh pair of socks and underwear. Established by several faith organizations 10 years ago, No More Deaths is now headquartered at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Tucson. The congregation adopted it as a ministry of the church in 2008. One morning, our group meets with the Reverend Diane Daugert and two dedicated men in their 20s. Tyler coordinates volunteers for the clinic and desert water drops and clothing donations. Ricky is in charge of documenting human rights violations. He does advocacy for specific migrant cases. They are just now publishing a report called Shakedown about the theft that migrants experience. In the past 3 years, No More Deaths has pursued nearly 1,500 requests by migrants for help in recovering money or cell phones or other personal property that had been taken away from them by the authorities during detention or arrest. On deportation, if their money is returned at all, it comes in the form of an American check, which is useless once they are deported to another country. The loss of what little they had makes it hard to travel home, hard to contact their families, hard to buy food. On its website, No More Deaths has published a set of interfaith principles and recommendations for immigration reform. Its preamble says this: death and suffering diminish us all. We share a faith and a moral imperative that transcends borders, celebrates the contributions that immigrant peoples bring, and compels us to build relationships that are grounded in justice and love. There are many perspectives on the crisis at the border. Ranchers and landowners can testify to the fears, frustrations, and anger they feel at the influx of migrants and refugees. To be sure, their perspectives deserve understanding. Yet for those humanitarian volunteers who bear witness every day to the desperation and vulnerability of migrants, the first principle must be human dignity. No More Deaths. It says it all. My clergy group goes hiking one morning deep in the Sonoran Desert. Volunteers from Green Valley Samaritans guide us up and down the hills. I try to imagine walking for days under the hot sun and at night over the rocks and cactus plants. Escorting me is an older woman named Shura, wearing a floppy hat and heavy jeans and a t-shirt that says, "Humanitarian aid is not a crime." She tells me about the people she's met, women, children, men. She's tended the blistered and bleeding feet of migrants who trek the desert. Once, after treating a man's feet, she checked his shoulders. He had blisters there, indicating he'd been carrying a heavy pack. She realized that this might indicate he was a mule carrying drugs north. He probably was, she says. I treated him anyway. How do I know that he wasn't doing it because there had been a gun held to his head? Maybe someday he will have a gun to another's head, but we'll stop remembering my kindness. Where there is kindness, there is hope, she says. Human rights workers tell us that the border wall and the U.S. militarization of the border has devastated the local economies on both sides of the wall. It's no longer a thriving bi-national, bi-cultural neighborhood, but two separate struggling towns. One morning, we drive across the border into Nogales, Mexico. The city has hundreds of factories run by foreign owners. They put them there to avoid paying taxes and avoid paying the higher wages they need to pay in the United States or other industrialized countries. Across the road from these sturdy, gleaming maquiladoras, as they're called in Spanish, and way down the hill we see shanty towns that have risen in the dirt, corrugated steel roofs and water tanks on top of them. A pickup truck is trolling the unpaved streets, the driver barking through a loudspeaker selling water and grocery items. There's no public water for the worker shanty towns. At noon, our delegation divides up, with small groups of us going with several different Nogales families. Four of us walk up a narrow street on a hill, and then we climb stone steps to a worn-looking concrete house. The smiling wife greets us. She hugs a woman minister that she'd met on a previous delegation. The lady's little grandson plays with a remote control car. I laugh when it bumps into my shoe. Grandma is babysitting the boy while his parents are at work. I meet her husband, who's not working. He was laid off at age 60 by one of those foreign-owned factories. He's been looking for a few years for a steady job and now is learning computer repair with his son-in-law. Out the window, we can see the border fence and the towers of cameras and stadium lights for all-night vigilance by the United States. The man says the light pours into the house all night long. The noisy chopping of helicopters also inhibits a night's rest. Siéntense. The wife invites us to be seated at a rectangular kitchen table covered with a vinyl tablecloth. On disposable plates, she serves us chicken with mole sauce, rice and beans, tortillas, and sauteed vegetables. She offers us a second helping. I oblige. Nogales is not only an industrial city where the Border Patrol leaves deported Mexican migrants. It's also a community. Our host family has never been well off, but when they began seeing migrants going hungry in the streets, they began feeding them. Human dignity reclaimed at the kitchen table. Where there is kindness, there is hope. All of us well-fed ministers pack ourselves into our vans and ride back down to the busy center of Nogales. Our next stop, the Kino Border Initiative. Right off the sidewalk, we step up through a chain-link fence gate into a small building roofed with corrugated steel with a concrete floor. Long picnic tables fill most of the room, which is airy and bright, though it is shielded from the sun. This is called the dining room in Spanish, but it's so much more. Thomas, a tall, young Californian, introduces himself to us. He is working at the border as he prepares to take vows in the Jesuit order. He explains the Kino Border Initiative's three-part mission. It documents human rights abuses experienced in the United States and Mexico. It provides advocacy for specific people seeking asylum. And it takes pains to treat everyone with dignity. In this place, deported migrants can make long-distance phone calls to tell their families that they are alive and where they are. They can get fresh underwear and socks. They can get shoes, but only if their shoes are falling apart. There's not enough to go around for everyone. Because we U.S. Americans typically are larger, our host says, they always need shoes for smaller people, including men's size 8 or 9. I realize that's my size. How many pairs of shoes do I own? Shelves are stuffed with donations of men's and women's pants and shirts. This is crucial, as those who've been deported after their detention are wearing either prison uniforms or clothes that are way too big. And this makes them easy targets for the cartels, the Mexican mafia, which tries to lure the men into drug smuggling and lure the women into sexual slavery. Nogales is a safe city for its residents, but not for migrants passing through. Thomas tells us that the cartels watch the border more than the border patrol, and they exact a tax when people want to cross over. Numerous migrants have been kidnapped by cartels, which then extort more money out of a family back home. The United States often deports people in the middle of the night, in the middle of town. Every guest who comes into this place must have documents to show that they've left a Central American country like Guatemala or Honduras, or that show they've been deported recently back to Mexico. This practice keeps out men from the cartel so they can't recruit, harass, or extort the guests. At the two daily meals provided in the dining room, women are seated at separate tables. Nuns and other female volunteers interview them to find out if they have been abused or need to get away from anyone. In the middle of a concrete wall on one side is a little bathroom sink, and on either side of the sink is a narrow door to a toilet. And painted on the wall above is a mural of the Last Supper. Jesus is in the center of a long table, wearing a baseball cap turned backwards. Huddling up against him on both sides are women, and then next to them are men. At the Kino Border Initiative, they pause for prayer before every meal. Thomas says that the unspoken emotions of the migrants during these moments create the most sincere and heavy silence he's ever felt at a time of prayer. So full of grief, humility, yearning, and hope. Two of the walls in this dining room are chain-link fences covered by large vinyl-covered posters tied down as curtains. On the posters are photos of people with words affirming universal human rights. "I have the right to work," one says. Another shows a woman opening her jacket to show a t-shirt. "The right to be respected physically, sexually, and psychologically." We watch a video that they show to all of the guests made with a male singing group popular in Mexico. In cowboy hats with big smiles, the men say, "No matter where you are or where you're from, you have human rights." They list the rights that migrants are guaranteed by international law. They shout, "Just by being human, you have rights." Before we leave, two women come to cook the evening meal in a modest kitchen behind the concrete wall. For up to 7 days, a migrant guest can receive 2 hot meals a day. The cooks don't know quite how many to plan for, so they cook a lot. The guests are served at their tables individually, not in a buffet line. If there's an item they don't like, they are not served it. It may be the first time some of the migrants have ever been waited on. And it's been a long time since many of them have been treated with such kind attention. A volunteer will ask if they would like seconds, and then bring it to them as much as they like. The intention, Thomas tells us, the hope, is for people to leave the place with their heads held a little bit higher than when they first arrived. Human dignity is reclaimed with food and water, listening and advocacy, clean socks, hospitality, and kindness. Where there is kindness, there is hope. The immigration and refugee crisis affects every continent of our globe and nearly every nation. It's massive in scale and scope, with many factors and causes and no simple solutions. Immigration policy is not an easy issue, and reasonable people can have different impressions and different opinions. But let us endeavor to keep human dignity and kindness as the touchstone for our thinking, learning, speaking, acting, and giving. Let kindness be our guide, kindness be our strength, kindness be our hope. Amen. Blessed be.